Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine the batteries inside your body's cells are, well, dying.
Right, which is a terrifying thought.
Exactly, because when that happens, it leads to the cascading failure we experience as aging, or heart disease, or even severe neurodegeneration. But what if doctors could just give you a battery transplant, like inject fresh, healthy powerhouses right into your damaged tissues?
Let's swap them out.
Right. But here's the catch. Your body's defense systems treat these microscopic batteries like dangerous invaders. They hunt them down and destroy them before they can offer any help. So how could this change the way we treat currently incurable diseases? And what really happens when we try to smuggle foreign organelles past our own immune systems?
It is, it's really a profound concept to consider.
Yeah.
We are talking about moving past traditional pharmacology and fundamentally upgrading the machinery of a living cell.
Yeah. And today we celebrate the work of Gokhan Brisson-Kubat, Pasquale Piccone, Erkan Tunke,
Kishof K. Singh, and Domenico Nusso.
Yes. And their massive international team spanning institutions in Turkey, Italy, and the USA. Their perspective article, which is titled Biotechnological Approaches and Therapeutic Potential of Mitochondria Transfer and Transplantation, was published online in Nature Communications on July 1st, 2025.
It's just a critical piece of literature to examine because it addresses the exact biological bottleneck you just highlighted.
Right.
The idea of mitochondrial transfer and transplantation, or MTT, is heavily researched right now because mitochondrial dysfunction is the shared root of so many devastating conditions.
Like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's.
Exactly. From those all the way to ischemic heart disease. The organelles just stop producing ATP, which is the molecular energy currency of the cell, and they lose their ability to regulate cellular life and death.
Okay, let's unpack this. Why is a direct transplant so incredibly difficult?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if my cell has a dying battery and you have a syringe full of healthy ones, what stops us from just injecting those naked mitochondria straight into my bloodstream and calling it a day?
Well, the primary barrier is the extracellular environment itself. I mean, outside the protective bubble of a host cell, it is an absolute massacre for these organelles.
A massacre? Really?
Oh, yeah. Isolated, naked mitochondria have a terrible survival rate in the bloodstream or the extracellular fluid. They lose their respiratory function in just about 2 hours.
Wait, 2 hours? That gives a medical team like almost zero operational window?
Right, and that is under normal conditions. In a clinical scenario where tissue is already damaged, the environment is incredibly hostile.
Because of the injury.
Exactly. The space between cells becomes packed with abnormally high calcium concentrations. And mitochondria naturally absorb calcium to help regulate cellular signaling, but in these massive, unregulated doses outside the cell, it essentially short-circuits them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
On top of that, damaged tissue pumps out toxic cellular exhaust, technically known as reactive oxygen species, or ROS.
So these are essentially corrosive byproducts of dying cells.
That is a very accurate way to visualize it, yeah. When naked mitochondria hit this environment filled with excessive calcium and corrosive ROS, they swell up, clump together, and just rapidly degrade.
So they just burst?
Basically. Mm. Currently, only about 10% of injected naked mitochondria ever actually survive to reach their target cells.
Which means 90% are bursting before they do any good. But I imagine bursting biological material in the bloodstream causes its own set of problems, right?
Oh, it causes a catastrophic secondary issue. You have to remember the evolutionary history of mitochondria. Billions of years ago, they were independent bacteria.
Oh, right. The endosymbiotic theory?
Yes. So when they degrade in your bloodstream, they release what we call damage-associated molecular patterns, or DAMPs. Because of their bacterial ancestry, mitochondrial DNA looks completely foreign to us.
So the body panics.
Total panic. Your immune system sees this debris, assumes you have a severe bacterial infection, and launches a massive inflammatory attack. Mm. It acts like a biological flare gun, causing severe friendly fire on your own tissues.
Okay, so if naked mitochondria are getting destroyed out in the open and triggering this massive immune retaliation along the way, we essentially need to build them an armored transport.
Precisely.
We need to treat these organelles like fragile VIP cargo that requires different types of armored vehicles depending on the destination.
That is the perfect framework for understanding the bioengineering in this paper. The researchers highlight four distinct, cutting-edge biotechnological strategies to armor and target these VIPs. The first method tackles the physical barrier of the cell membrane through surface modification.
Okay, let me see if I can deduce the problem here. Cells have a membrane wall, and I know from basic biology that these walls carry a charge. Do mitochondria have a charge that prevents them from just slipping inside?
You are hitting on the exact physical limitation. Mitochondria naturally possess a highly negative surface charge.
And human cells do too, right?
Yes, human cell membranes also carry a negative charge. So basic physics dictates that, like, charges repel. Even if a naked mitochondrion somehow survives the bloodstream and reaches the target cell, it naturally bounces right off the door.
So how do they fix that?
To solve this, researchers are painting the mitochondria with positively charged molecules called cell-penetrating peptides.
Ah, so they're masking the negative charge with a positive one, effectively creating like a VIP access badge.
Exactly. They use peptides like PEP1 or a protein-derived from HIV-1 called TT.
Wait, we are using components of the HIV virus?
Well, we are using the mechanical key the virus uses, completely stripped of the virus itself. I mean, viruses are master infiltrators, right?
True.
The TAP peptide sequence is just a specialized biological tool that slides perfectly into the locks of our cell membranes. By attaching TAT, along with compounds like dextrin and TPP, sinuses can mask the negative charge entirely.
What does the TPP do in that mix?
TPP is highly lipophilic, meaning it chemically binds easily with fats. Since our cell membranes are made of a lipid layer, essentially fat, the TPP acts like a molecular grease. It helps the mitochondria slide effortlessly through the cellular barrier.
That is incredibly elegant. We are using the physical properties of the cell against itself to slip the cargo inside.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But if surface camouflage just helps them slip through the door, what if the mitochondria need an armored escort across a long hostile distance? That brings us to the second method, which is actually something nature already does. Natural extracellular vesicles, or EVs.
Yeah, what stands out here is that nature solved this transport problem long before human engineers did. Our own brains have a built-in ambulance service.
Really? An ambulance service?
Yeah. When neurons suffer damage, for instance, during a stroke, support cells in the brain called astrocytes sense the distress. They naturally package their own healthy mitochondria into tiny microvesicles and ship them directly to the struggling neurons.
Okay, so an EV is essentially a biological bubble wrap made out of the cell's own membrane.
Right. These natural vesicles are enclosed in a lipid bilayer that acts as a fortress. It completely shields the mitochondria from that hostile, high-calcium environment we discussed earlier.
And researchers are tapping into this.
Yes. The paper highlights that researchers are now harvesting these natural vesicles from cultured cells to use as delivery trucks. Remember, naked mitochondria might die in 2 hours, but when packed inside these natural EVs, they survive and remain functional against severe calcium and oxidative stress for up to 24 hours.
Wow, that 24-hour window completely changes the game for a medical intervention.
It does.
But relying on natural cells to manufacture these microscopic ambulances sounds painfully slow. I mean, if harvesting natural EVs isn't scalable for millions of patients, could we just 3D print our own synthetic lipid bubbles? Which leads right into the third method, engineered vesicles.
Right, transitioning from natural harvesting to synthetic manufacturing is vital for clinical application. The paper details a system called AMMITO, which stands for Artificial Membrane-Coated Mitochondria. Researchers take isolated mitochondria and wrap them in a synthetic lipid bilayer made from compounds like DOTAPAP and DOPE.
Let's break those down. What are DOTAP and DOPE actually doing? Are they just synthetic fats?
Yes, they are synthetic fats, but specially designed in a lab to mimic the exact flexibility and structure of a natural cell wall. You can't just use any rigid fat, or the bubble would shatter in the bloodstream.
Makes sense.
These molecules have a specific geometry that curves perfectly to form a stable sphere around the mitochondrion without crushing it. This synthetic encapsulation preserves the critical proteins on the surface of the mitochondria.
Proteins like TOM40 and ATP5A.
Exactly, which are absolutely necessary for energy production. So we get the protection of natural EV, but with complete control over the manufacturing process.
Okay, so we have surface camouflage for slipping through doors, we have natural ambulances, and we have synthetic armored trucks for transit. But the fourth method tackles a completely different mechanical problem, physical washout.
Yes, a very practical issue.
Right, because if a surgeon injects mitochondria directly into a beating ischemic heart, the sheer force of the pumping blood would just flush the organelles right out of the injury site before they could even enter the cells.
And that mechanical force is a massive hurdle for localized therapies. To combat it, bioengineers are utilizing hydrogels, specifically focusing on a fascinating polymer known as pleuronic F127.
Yeah, I was reading about this polymer, and its physical properties are mind-bending. It is temperature-sensitive, right? In a cold operating room, it exists as a liquid.
Which is crucial, because you can easily and safely mix the fragile mitochondria into this cool liquid without damaging them. But the moment you inject that liquid into the warm human body, hitting 37 degrees Celsius, the molecular structure of the polymer shifts.
It instantly turns into a gel.
Instantly.
So it deploys a biological net directly over the injury. But how do the mitochondria actually get out of the gel and into the starving heart cells without suffocating inside that net?
Because the gel is highly porous. It acts as a physical anchor against the rushing blood, holding the mitochondria safely against the damaged heart tissue.
Huh.
But its microscopic pores allow the organelles to slowly diffuse outward.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and it also acts as a chemical buffer. It absorbs the brunt of the calcium overload in the tissue, giving the mitochondria the physical stability and time they need to be integrated by the cardiomyocytes.
The engineering behind all four of these methods is brilliant, but the sheer data backing these interventions is what genuinely shocked me.
The numbers are impressive.
Very impressive. I want to look at some of these specific findings, starting with a concept from the paper that sounds like pure science fiction. Oral nanomotorized mitochondria.
Oh, this is a fascinating one.
When I first read this, my skepticism went through the roof. The idea that a patient could swallow a pill full of living mitochondria, have it survive the highly acidic human stomach, and somehow navigate to fix a damaged heart, it sounds fundamentally impossible.
It definitely pushes the boundaries of what we thought was pharmacologically possible. But the system is a masterpiece of bioengineering. It utilizes a multi-layered structure called CMNM-mito. To understand how it works, we really have to look at the layers.
Okay.
The mitochondria are first coated in a specific chemical compound, L-arginine-derived methacrylate. This forms the NAM, or nanomotor component.
I want to stop on the nanomotor for a second, because we use that word and people immediately picture tiny metal propellers. How does a chemical compound act as a motor?
It functions more like a microscopic chemical jet engine. When L-arginine encounters the massive amounts of reactive oxygen species and nitric oxide being pumped out by damaged heart tissue, a violent chemical reaction occurs.
A reaction that creates movement.
Exactly. This reaction generates microscopic chemical gradients, essentially tiny thrusts of energy that physically push the nanoparticle forward. It is chemically drawn to the exact location of the injury, using the distress signals of the dying tissue as its fuel.
It turns the toxic exhaust of the heart attack into fuel for the ambulance. That is unbelievable. But to get to the heart, it first has to survive digestion.
Which is where the outer layers come in. Over the nanomotor, they add a CM layer, which is made of actual cardiomyocyte membrane fragments.
Wait, they wrap it in a layer of heart cell skin?
They do. And finally, the entire package is placed inside an enteric capsule. The capsule protects the payload from the extreme acid of the stomach.
Okay, so it passes the stomach.
Right. And once it reaches the more neutral environment of the intestines, the capsule dissolves. The intestinal wall examines the payload, sees that outer layer of heart cell skin, and is tricked into absorbing it rapidly into the bloodstream rather than digesting it.
It's a complete Trojan horse.
Essentially. Once in the blood, the capsule is gone, the heart cell skin degrades, and the L-arginine motor activates, rocketing toward the inflammation.
And the statistical results of this pill are staggering. The paper details that the CMNM-mito system successfully delivered 7.9% of the mitochondrial dose directly into the damaged heart tissue. To put that in perspective, the non-motorized standard versions only delivered 1.0%.
Right.
That is nearly an 8-fold increase in targeted efficiency from an oral pill.
And we are seeing these massive leaps in efficiency across the board. Take the surface camouflage we discussed earlier, the TAT dextrin coating. Researchers tested this on cultured heart cells subjected to reperfusion injury.
Which is the massive oxidative shock tissues experience when a blood clot is cleared, right? When oxygen suddenly rushes back into the starved area.
Precisely. That sudden rush of oxygen creates a deadly spike in ROS.
Mm.
When they introduced the camouflage mitochondria to these shock cells, they saw a 182.8% increase in cellular uptake compared to free mitochondria.
That's huge.
And importantly, it wasn't just that more of them got inside. The presence of these healthy mitochondria actively prevented the host cells from undergoing apoptosis.
Which is programmed cell death. Okay, what about the synthetic lipid trucks, the Amito? Are they proving efficient to manufacture?
Highly efficient. The researchers achieved an 86% encapsulation efficiency, meaning there is very little wasted biological material during manufacturing.
And do they work?
Oh, yes. When they applied these synthetic vesicles to primary neurons, they documented a twofold increase in cellular uptake. Even more critically, when tested in living models, it provided significant neuroprotection against the type of brain damage seen in severe strokes.
Okay, so we have the tools to protect, transport, and integrate these cellular engines with precision. But this leads me to play devil's advocate for a moment.
Please do.
If we have the technology to slip biological upgrades into failing cells, what is stopping this from rolling out to clinics globally tomorrow? Are there biological realities we are underestimating here?
Well, this raises an important question. This is where we have to balance our enthusiasm with the sheer complexity of human biology. The authors spend significant time detailing severe limitations, starting with the blood-brain barrier, or BBB.
Ah, the fortress wall of the central nervous system. It's great at keeping toxins out, but notoriously difficult to penetrate with medicine.
And mitochondria are massive compared to typical drug molecules. I mean, if you want to treat Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, you have to cross that barrier and reach the brain parenchyma, the functional tissue of the brain where the neurons actually reside.
So they can't just cross easily?
No. If you inject these armored mitochondria systemically into a vein, they don't just float up to the brain. The body's filtration organs, the liver, the spleen, the kidneys, trap the vast majority of them.
Yeah.
Very few ever make it past the BBB.
Even with nanomotors.
Even then. And even if they do, they still have to navigate through millions of cells to find the specific failing neurons or glial cells that need help. Our targeting is good, but it is not yet capable of perfectly navigating the architecture of the human brain.
That makes sense. And beyond the anatomical hurdles, there has to be a massive bottleneck in quality control and manufacturing.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it is one thing to synthesize an 86% efficient batch of liposomes in a highly controlled petri dish, but doing this on an industrial scale for millions of patients seems astronomically difficult.
Transitioning from small-scale laboratory success to clinical grade, widespread manufacturing requires standardized protocols that currently do not exist.
Because they have to be identical, right?
Every single batch must be absolutely identical. Because we are dealing with biological organelles, you have to maintain absolute sterility to prevent contamination, all while ensuring the manufacturing process doesn't crush the fragile mitochondria inside.
I'm also curious about the long-term biological consequences. Like, if we successfully integrate a synthetic nanoparticle into a human cell, what happens to the synthetic fat, the DOPE and DUTAP, or the L-arginine motor?
It is a critical unknown. Synthetic nanoparticles and chemical coatings can be toxic in their own right if they accumulate. Or,
yeah.
You know, they could trigger delayed immune clearance over months or years.
Yeah.
We also lack a fundamental understanding of the long-term life cycle of these transplanted organelles.
That's a good point. If they successfully integrate into my cellular network, do they just live there indefinitely?
We simply do not fully understand the mechanistic turnover. Observations show that some exogenous mitochondria successfully fuse with the host's mitochondrial network and share their healthy DNA.
Okay, that sounds ideal.
It is, but others are eventually flagged by the cell, routed to lysosomes, and broken down for parts. We don't know if a patient would require weekly infusions for the rest of their life to maintain the benefit, or if a single transplant permanently rewires the bioenergetic of the tissue.
Wow, and that brings up a fascinating biological risk regarding where these mitochondria come from in the first place.
Like sourcing.
Yeah, if a doctor harvests healthy mitochondria from my own muscle to fix my heart, that is autologous. But if my entire body is aging, my muscle mitochondria might be failing too. That means we have to use non-autologous sources mitochondria from a completely different donor.
And that introduces a profound biological consequence. Mitochondria possess their own distinct DNA, completely separate from the DNA in your cell's nucleus.
Okay.
If we inject foreign mitochondria into a patient, there is a theoretical risk that these donor organelles could integrate into the patient's germline cells, the reproductive cells.
Wait, if they integrate into reproductive cells, the patient could pass that donor mitochondrial DNA on to their children.
Yes. We could be inadvertently introducing permanent, multi-generational genetic modifications. altering the heritable genetic makeup of a human lineage, without a comprehensive understanding of the long-term biological effects, is a monumental risk that the scientific community must navigate very carefully.
We are not just swapping a battery. We are installing a battery with its own source code that could outlive the patient. It requires an incredible amount of caution.
It really does.
Yeah.
But if we synthesize all of this, the core insight is that science is moving past merely treating the downstream symptoms of cellular decay. By merging advanced nanotechnology with human biology, we are learning how to physically transplant the very engines of life. We are pushing battery replacements for human cells closer to a clinical reality.
What does this mean for humanity's future in extreme environments? If we can actively repair the cellular decay caused by massive radiation, could mitochondrial transplants be the key to allowing astronauts to survive the deep space journey to Mars? If your cellular engines can be swapped out and upgraded, how long could your body keep running? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Turn the lights.